Bill wants to know
15,
what the
20,
contact
20, 20.
Info is to get into the meeting. Mm.
Oh, would you like me to send that to him?
Yeah, that'd be great. Forward him the agenda. Cam, do you know if anybody else is coming here today?
John Parker is almost always here, and I think
hey, there he is
right now. Hello, John.
Oh, Mr. Sharp.
Hello, John.
How you doing?
All right, this is Andy Traylor. Go ahead and get started here. In the room, we've got myself, Tammy Mackey, Cam Sharp, Greg Taylor, and John Thorpe. Let's go ahead and go through who's on the phone today.
This is Dave Lonhart.
Dan at Willamette.
Greg at Marion Forcemento.
Brad at Foster, South St. Am.
Chris Walker.
Lance Kruzik.
That was Lance Kruzik.
Lance and Bernadette. Anybody else? All right. Okay. Sorry, folks that are on the phone. I can't get the web meeting up today, so there's nothing really to project that I know about other than the agenda, which you all should have in your email. So we'll start going through that. First item on there is to approve the March HMT minutes. I think we got several different comments back from folks. Any problems or corrections or objections to those minutes?
I frankly don't remember reviewing it this time. Do you remember getting any comments?
I didn't get any comments from...
You didn't get anything from me this time.
I thought I got... Did I get an email from you saying it was fine?
Probably.
Yeah. I got a couple of no edits, a couple of small edits from Andy.
Okay. I'll defer to the group. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to just take it up and go through it.
You usually do.
All right. Well, let's say those are approved then. Moving on to action items. Number one on there is Dexter releases into Little Fall Creek. The action was for ODFW to find a truck and coordinate the release. Is there anything else we need to discuss there? I think that one's pretty much wrapped up.
We're going to need to get volunteers. We're going to try to get volunteers to do that. And we were hoping that it would be a pickup truck with a big tank in the back.
We have tanks.
Hey, this is Dave. Is there, I know you said it was pretty much wrapped up, and it probably is, but is there a study plan of some sort out there for these releases into Little Fall Creek, something I can look at?
No, well, I'm not beyond the monitoring plan. We do our pre-spawning mortality and spawning ground surveys in Little Fall Creek and have for the last 3 years.
So these fish are outplants from Dexter Trap, is that right?
Correct. So for the past 3 years, they've been hatchery origin fish that are outplanted there, perhaps a few unclipped fish, I don't recall. And my crews do the weekly surveys, collect carcasses, count reds, expand to a population abundance estimate.
Yeah, what's the target number, or what is the number you're targeting, Cam?
It's not my target. It's the watershed district, but I believe it's on the order of 150 fish total. Dan, can you remember what the... Dan Peck?
Yeah.
How many fish?
We just do one load. It's usually around 150 to 200, depending on the day, but this is something new. Is this year they want to take all the unmarked fish and put them up there. So I don't know if there's actually a target goal, if we're going to add hatchery fish on top of it, or if we're just going to do the unmarked fish return into Dexter. I haven't heard any specifics as far as that goes.
Hey, Cam, is there, just not knowing anything about Little Fall Creek, Greg and others, please weigh in, but it appears to be, obviously, by virtue of its name, it's smaller than Fall Creek, and Fall Creek itself is not a wonderful river in the stream in the summertime. It gets low and warm. What about Little Fall Creek?
Oddly, we find, on average, that the pre-spawning mortality in Little Fall Creek is, from outplants out of Dexter, are generally lower than pre-spawning mortality estimates for fish outplanted into the North Fork, Middle Fork out of Dexter. And that means, by default, they're also lower than in Fall Creek.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, Dave, to remember is you're pretty much 100% mortality dumping these unmarked fish back into the Middle Fork below Dexter.
And that was kind of the impetus.
That's why we were trying to move these someplace where at least they had a chance.
Yep. Don't would not disagree with that. They don't do well if they're put back in there. But is this, are people comfortable that we're taking all of the, basically, the unmarked, i.e. natural origin fish, which the very few that actually do return, and putting them in Little Fall Creek? Is that, people are comfortable with that?
Not entirely
not that I
comfortable.
A better place to put them, but...
Okay, so, of course, the backstory is that we would prefer to use them in broodstock, essentially treating them as a gene bank for the small number that are naturally produced. As soon as the HGMP for the Middle Fork is approved, we'll probably switch right back into using most of those fish in brood.
Okay. No,
in the interim, we don't want them to just simply die. So this is what we came up with.
And this was actually on the February HMT call. And there's still an action item from back then. And it said that, John, you were going to talk with Steve Marks and see if...
It's a done deal.
Okay, it's done.
The district, the district is on board. The district, that's Jeff Ziller, was going to try and find a volunteer or somebody that would drive the trucks. There was something about that. But, yeah, I think...
Yeah, he's actually working with the Forest Service and trying to get them to do it.
Yeah, that's what it was.
We've got nothing but little logistic details to go. I think it's moving forward.
It's not a giant project.
Right, yeah.
Having pretty small. Said that, you don't have to sit there every day. The trap is operated for maybe one fish, but okay.
That's what you get paid for.
Yeah,
I don't do that.
The number of fish isn't big, but it's the amount of days you're going to sit there for one fish, maybe zero fish.
Yeah. Hey, were you outplant them, you guys? Is there a natural barrier on Little Fall Creek? I know there was some kind of ladder or something. I've never seen the stream.
Yeah, it's above the natural barrier.
The fish are placed above that?
Correct.
Yes.
Have you guys seen, do the fish fall back down below that natural barrier, or do they pretty much stay up there?
They pretty much stay up there, but yes, we've seen them down below, but we don't know whether the ones we've seen below volunteered to the system or fell back.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Well, any more?
Cam, do we want to Floyd tag these?
That's a good idea. I mean, we do that routinely.
Yeah, we're doing it to the ones we released back into the Middle Fork, so why not? And then we would know for sure if they did drop back where they came from.
Lance, could you remind me where we landed on the flexibility to allow Floyd tagging on fish? Is there permit requirements there? I think we settled that there really weren't.
I don't know for sure, but I would guess not. And we're handling them anyways, and that's allowed, authorized. So what's the big deal about sticking a Floyd tag in? I think you're good to go.
Okay, I like that idea. So Floyd tag him, and then we know something about him. Why? What are you smiling about? Greg is smiling. You can't see that on the phone.
I don't know. I'm scared of permits these days. So I'm just scared.
Well, this is a normal broodstock handling, outplanting operation that's already authorized, so this is no new handling of fish.
But what about the fact that they're natural origin and we don't have an HGMP in place? Is that going to cause an issue?
I think the answer was no, Dave. Let's move on to the next agenda item.
Was that? I missed that. The head nod.
So they're not being incorporated into the broodstock, and that's what's required under approved HGMP. Otherwise, the operation just falls back under the normal core activities that are done at the base of the dam via the biop.
Yeah, no, I agree, but I kind of remember that we were purposefully not outplanting natural origin fish, let's say, upstream of Detroit because we didn't have authorization because we didn't have an HGMP. So how does this differ?
No, that wasn't the case. The reason why wildfish haven't been going above Detroit and similar for Lookout Point is we didn't think that was the best use of those fish. The survival was too low. It had nothing to do with an approved HGMP.
All right. Sounds like we have a consensus, more or less. Any further discussion on next month's meeting needed? Otherwise, we'll just take this off. Cool. All right, moving on. 2.3, South Fork McKenzie Adult Release Site. This was an action item for me to talk to the Forest Service and get their thoughts about maybe altering that campsite at Frizzell Crossing. I've talked with Jeff Siller and with Greg Taylor and with Lance a little bit about this site. And after some further discussion, I think that it might not be worth it to pursue much more at this site. There would be some alterations to the campground. It wouldn't be a huge cost, but it would cost some money. And that site is only like 4 river miles above where we're currently putting in fish. And this would improve dumping hatchery fish off that bridge, but it is hatchery fish, so there isn't really a huge benefit to wild fish here. It sounded like the consensus from the folks that I talked to was that it might do some good, but there's not a huge benefit. And so I think our resources might be used elsewhere, like on the North Santiam, where we have 2 really good sites that could use a little bit of work and greatly improve the situation there. So
what did Jeff say about it?
Jeff kind of had the same opinion as you, is that it might help a little bit, but it's not going to do a huge amount of good. It wouldn't hurt, but we don't necessarily have a ton of money to throw at things that might help.
What was the modification that was suggested?
We'd have to move a couple of boulders that block vehicles from driving into campsites. We'd have to move a picnic table and maybe a fire pit. And then if we move those boulders out of the way, we would probably have to put in some kind of vehicle gate that could be unlocked for the truck to go through, but still prevent regular public access. So
this is the one where they actually camp right where we want to
Right there, yep. Okay. It's like in a campsite. Okay. Yeah.
There's a glide there that's probably better for a release location than the existing one. Okay. Call for discussion. The change in our outlook for flows in all of the streams this mm-hmm. year, what is that going to do to the bridge outplant? I mean, is it going to be even shallower and less fish friendly? I don't know. I mean, I've seen it.
I would imagine.
That's all I've done.
I mean, I don't know about the bridge outplant, and I guess I don't know about it.
Okay.
Are you talking about the low bridge out when you guys?
No, Kremers is taking them up
the upper
bridge
out.
Yeah.
Because the lower bridge, yeah, I mean, you guys did the same thing.
We're talking about the south
bridge. I don't know. I would imagine under the best of conditions, the bridge outplant is not the best release. I mean, you're above Roaring River. It's tiny, tiny yeah. stream up there.
So my argument has been is what we see is, I think we see, is that when we outplant higher in the system with hatchery fish that are naive to that system, have never been there, they tend to stay or spawn closer to where they're outplanted. If you put them down low near the reservoir, an unknown proportion of them just fall back because they're lost and naive to the yeah. system. And so what I think it has created when we were outplanting large numbers of hatchery fish down low is a bias where we have loss of fish to pre-spawn mortality that's never measured because my crews can't recover carcasses in the reservoir. So, and I think that's right. one of the reasons that we typically with our walking and boat surveys see relatively low pre-spawning mortality or estimate low pre-spawning mortality when the radio telemetry work was quite a bit higher. So what I've kind of concluded is that true pre-spawning mortality in the South Fork McKenzie is somewhere in between what the radio telemetry shows and what the walking and floating surveys show. So radio telemetry has some tag related mortality. Mm-hmm. Walking surveys tend to be biased if some of the carcasses are out of the system and can't be sampled to determine whether they actually spawn.
Yeah.
We can live with that, we always have, but I'd hope to have better distribution of the hatchery fish, because I'm confident we'll have more spawning of hatchery fish if they're outplanted higher. Mm-hmm. I'd watch it carefully, but I mean, of course, we're not going to dump truckloads of hatchery fish into 3 inches of water into a study. I mean, we sure. have to default to a lower river release.
Yeah.
So, let's make sure I understand. So, the thought is better distribution, or they're going to survive at a higher rate, putting them way up.
better distribution, more okay. opportunity for them to rear, because they'll have more river miles to decide to drop out and rear for a little longer, even if it's a short time. Because mm-hmm. I think the wild fish self-distribute.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're born
yeah.
there.
Yeah, exactly.
But hatchery fish weren't.
No. Yeah. And that's what they do. I mean, where you put them is where they kind of end up, unless there's something
weird. So is the new outplanting site up there not being used?
No. It's not used.
It's not. You can't. That's the one, Lance, where the river has changed a little bit since when that site was originally identified. What was a proper outplant site is now pretty fast moving.
Yep.
Yeah, but is it still better than the bridge dump?
No.
The unusable site?
That was Kirk Kremers. He said that the bridge release, let's not call it a dump,
the bridge
is
slat.
Superior to the improved site that has a change in the channel morphology.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's better.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go with the bridge release, upper bridge release.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a pretty good pool right there, and it's quickly moving water, so it seems like as soon as those fish hit, they're quickly swept downstream and don't have much free fall actually in the surface. But. And then the hard rock site that you guys are using, Greg, that one's adequate.
Yeah.
Seems to be pretty good.
Yeah.
No problems there.
Maybe we should just put four wheel drive on the ODFW truck and we could use that site.
Okay. Take it out.
That would be really great.
Four drive liberation truck. Four. ODFW. His budget. Our decision is to go with the upper bridge release.
And Brian, our driver here at McKenzie hasn't seen a lot of mortality dumping him off that bridge. So,
releasing him.
No.
Liberating.
Well, you know, as was pointed out, they're just hatchery fish. I wish people would think about it a little bit differently. Remember, that run was started by hatchery fish.
You sure didn't hear me say just hatchery fish.
That's a little wrong when that is stated like that. But anyway, maybe I'm being a little bit sensitive.
No, you're fine. You're helping us keep on track.
Yeah, and they're for supplementation. We want them to spawn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Lance, any further thoughts? I mean, I don't have an opinion about whether or not I think this one needs to go, and I'm happy to pursue it if the region feels like it's a worthwhile option. But from talking with you and Jeff and Greg, it sounded like maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, no, I don't have any other thoughts.
And it sounds now like
that.
So, are you for it or against it, I guess?
Of putting money into the campground site?
Yes, sir.
No, I'm not. I don't think we should.
Okay. Thank you.
But as an alternative, we would redirect the available funds to improvements in the North Santa Yam release site, Cooper's
That's correct.
Bridge. So, as long as that happens, then mm-hmm. that's a great idea.
Yep.
But if the money just simply goes away and nothing happens at either, that would suck. So.
No, I really want to address that North Sanium site, which is actually going to end up being scrapping Cooper's Ridge
yeah.
and using the lower log deck pool, which is half a mile upstream. Okay. Moving on.
Well, and there's also the option of using hard rock for the hatchery release too, right?
I still like to get hatchery fish. That's the option if the upper bridge release won't work. I still like to ensure that we have better distribution of the hatchery origin spawners, just because they'll be better distributed when their offspring come back as adults, I'd presume.
Right.
But yes, of course, if the upper bridge release can't work, then it's hard rock.
All right. Anything else on that one?
Hard rock.
Okay.
Hi. Hey, Chuck.
Moving on, 4.3 Steelhead HGMP workgroup. That'll be after all of our regular business here, so move over that one for now. But that could be taken off the action items because that's been done. Foster pre-sort pool jumping. Brett brought up the issue of having some steelhead jump out of the pre-sort pool last meeting, resulting in a couple of mortalities. And I think Doug Gartlitz was going to provide Brett with some photos of the cover that was there. And I think Greg and Minto is also going to get in touch with Brett about what they have to cover their pre-sort pool.
Yeah, I went over there and looked at Minto, and then I talked to somebody from Cougar, and we don't have access to the other side of our pre-sort pool, so those systems aren't going to work.
All
so
right.
We've got a couple other ideas that we're kind of exploring. Anyway, we're looking into it, so we'll get something in place.
Okay. Thanks, Brett.
You bet.
2.6, lookout point. Tanner Gate rehab. I sent out the memorandum of coordination for that a couple of days ago. I'm asking for any comments back from the agencies by the 27th, I believe, which gives you guys like 2 weeks to look over that. And for those that are not familiar with that process, in the Columbia River Basin, typically memorandums of coordination are sent out for any unusual operations, either at a hydro project or at a fish facility. And most of the time these are relating to construction or operational changes. And what we'd like to do is actually send these out before these schedules get finalized so that regional fish managers have an opportunity to weigh in and give their opinions on the schedule or how work is conducted or maybe even the order of things sometimes. And so this work was already scheduled by the time that I found out about it. And the schedule is pretty much set in place, but there's still opportunities to have an input if you guys would like to do so. So it'd be nice to have comments from the major agencies involved. And if you have any suggestions, we'll try to address those, keeping in mind that it's already kind of been set in stone here. Well, not set in stone, but already got the ball rolling on it. Any questions on that? Or comments right away?
I can understand it better.
Sure.
I know that the district is interested in what exactly it's going to mean.
Mm-hmm. Good. So. Yeah. No, that's great. And if there are any questions, you can send them to me.
The deadline for comments is?
It says in the email that I sent out, I think it's the 27th. 2 weeks.
Okay.
It's going to be hot in the fall at Dexter. Hotter than normal. So,
yeah.
That's the bottom line. And right now, I mean, with the water year we're having, we're not storing the water anyway. So, it was going to be, unfortunately, it wasn't going to be good no matter what. But if what you're used to, you know, take what you're used to and then think about some of these years when we've had to pull a lookout earlier, what we see always is a warmer fall. That's what we're going to see. So, that won't be good.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. That's the foundation of Dan Peck's concerns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we had a little bit of discussion last month about maybe using some medicated feed
at
Dexter holding ponds. And there is some on hand, but maybe not enough. So, maybe anticipating a request
now,
for extra funds.
The rest of the summer, early summer through early fall, is going to be cooler mm-hmm. than what we've mm-hmm. been living with recently with the temperature ops. So, a little bit of a trade-off, but you are going to see a bigger, later peak of that fall temperature than what you have.
Magnitude? Any idea? Can you guess? Is it
I'm guessing we're going to be up in the 65 degree range, if not slightly higher. Peak temp.
Okay.
In and around that last week of October.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It isn't good.
Bass hatchery.
65 is
awesome. 85 is not good. No, 85
was anticipated.
You're right, 85 would be worse.
65 degrees. Okay, I guess you're right. That's not
is
that
right
bad.
There.
We'll see.
Still alive.
Hopefully we'll be in this cool, wet summer.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's coming.
Well, yeah, it could be. Snowing yesterday, right?
Yeah.
So, related to the fish that are at Dexter in the fall, are you guys thinking contingencies if it gets really bad, or are we planning for that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the only thing we can really do is release them if it's so bad, but like Greg said, this isn't something that we haven't dealt with on low water years before we started really doing temperature control.
Okay.
Yeah, we should, you know, if we have a chance, probably should go back and just look at what 2001 looked like. And then
I did. I looked at
that up with your what you end up having to do on site there.
Yeah, and I did look at that and just kind of compared it. And, you know, there was years where we had to treat down there for columnaris and frunculosis like three or four times, but we still made it through.
Okay.
It's not fun, but it's doable.
So, Dan, remind us what kind of numbers are down there in the fall.
About 1.2 million.
The whole thing, huh?
Yeah, we have to get them out of here by 1st of June.
Okay, wow.
So Dexter's full. I mean, our first release out of Dexter's November.
Right.
Oh, so, yeah, it's full.
Is that the beginning of the month or the end of the month, Dan?
It's beginning in June. It just depends on our marking. This year we're actually starting our marking later. They're not bringing us our trailers until the week of the 18th. So we probably won't have fish at Dexter until closer to the middle of June this year.
Your fall release, though, your November
release. Oh, fall release. Usually it's mid-November, anywhere from the 1st to mid-November. What we try to do is wait for a storm.
Yeah, and that's when the reservoir will turn. So you'll see it start backing off around that time a little bit. So it'll be better conditions for fish at that point.
All right. Well, yeah, please include any and all comments in that MOC and then send it back to me. All right, 2.7, alternate outplant strategies based on temp and flow. We'll talk about this later. Chris Caudill is going to call in around 10:30 or 11.
You said that?
Okay.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking about. There was an action for Lance to send a link to some of the reports that have been done on the Rogue, looking at temperature and flow conditions. Lance, did you have a chance to do that?
Yeah, I don't know if I send out that link, but maybe that Greg's on. He can drum it up.
Well, having
what they were interested in, Greg, was just how the Rogue's managed for flows and temps down at Agnes and the standards there, and how Lost Creek ops are managed to affect that.
Okay. Yeah, I can talk about that. It's certainly something that I've thought about that has some application to the Willamette. If you think about our main stem flow targets in the Willamette, they are not geared towards, well, Chinook, for one, and then they're not really geared to any specific. We have a minimum threshold, essentially, that we're trying to meet. In the Rogue, it's done a little bit differently, and the focus is 100% on trying to ensure that pre-spawning mortality doesn't take hold and start. And so what they do down there and what we do is we manage to a specific set of temperatures at Agnes, which happens to be 150 miles from the dam, or, well, not quite that far, 100 miles from the dam. It's a long way. And then those change over the months of May and June, and essentially they get warmer and warmer and warmer. But by following those temperature targets. And even in some of these difficult years, we've been able to keep the pre-spawning mortality in check down there doing that. And so I could get the group that information and show them how that actually works. It is a real-time thing. We do have to monitor it very closely. We do adjust flows then accordingly. And then there are caps. So we're not going to just put an unlimited amount of water down there for spring Chinook. There is a cap at some point where we say, okay, well, this is the amount or the volume of water that we're willing to expend at this time of the year, and but no more than that, because we'll wipe out everything else for the rest of the year. And so it generally, I think, works very, very, very well. At least when you go back and look at the historic data and what was happening down there.
You often hit the cap?
We do hit the cap. In certain years, we will hit the cap. The cap is about 3,800 CFS. And so, yeah, it just depends on the year. Depends on how early we're getting going.
Any sense of whether the cap is fairly liberal? Do you see an association with higher pre-spawning mortality when you don't have enough water, that we have to get to the cap? Does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it doesn't result in no pre-spawning mortality.
Sure.
In the Rogue.
Absolutely.
But what you don't get are, and in the Rogue, you have the canyon, and you have conditions where you know they're stressing these fish because they'll pull into these creek mouths that are cool. And so that's kind of the first sign that things are bad. And then you get large-scale fish kills, pre-spawning mortality events in the canyon down there. We have not been seeing those, even when we've been bumping up on those caps, at least in the last 10, 15 years. And so we do get pre-spawning mortality, more in some years, less in others, but we have been trying to avoid those large scale, 80-90%
right.
Yeah, catastrophic events. And I think the way that things have been managed down there, it's been effective in doing that. So it's absolutely something to consider. In the Willamette, I don't think we have the same obvious sort of catastrophic events that occur. It seems to be more of a drip. Like we just keep kind of lose them, yeah, all along the way. So it may or may not work in the same way. But the concept of providing flow in sort of a real-time, adaptable way based on environmental conditions, I think, is one that we should consider. And having some temperature targets and some flow volume caps maybe is worth considering, and it may help. It might help.
How hard would it be to develop, I'm assuming there's a model associated with the...
I don't think it's that difficult. Tom Satherwaite was the one that developed this. ODFW was there before the dams even went in. Was there forever, his entire career. So Tom developed this. It's not rocket science. And the targets get less conservative as we get later in the year. In other words, we're running 66, 67 early in the year, and then we run 67, 68, 69. Things kind of build as we get later in the season, farther along the run. But it works. And it works in years where there would have and definitely should have been issues.
So is this something for the flow team to adopt?
What you could look at is taking the existing mainstem flow targets and thinking about focusing those a little bit more, providing some temp targets to go along with them. Right now they're just purely flow. It's literally a 15,000 CFS, and that's pretty much it. not a lot of consideration for run timing of Chinook, targeting releases during very, you know, might be key week or two that we, man, maybe we should be sending an extra pulse of water and then we could back off, you know, at some other time. Right now it's like, set it at 15,000 and, you know, hopefully good things happen. And that's kind of it. So this is a much more targeted, adaptable effort. So the water doesn't get released if we're doing good. If we need it and it's going to be 100 degrees in Medford, then we send it. And then we just keep adapting. So it's more intensive in terms of having to really kind of monitor conditions. But
ignorance. Are you thinking about the scope of the sub-basins, or are you trying to think about the scope of the upper watershed? I mean, two different scales.
Yeah.
One would be managing 18 different dams, and one would be just in each different river up to two, maybe three.
The way I was thinking about implementation of something like this was more of a place lower in the basin, a single point, and I was thinking more like Willamette Falls or something like that. Because Agnes is... You know, Agnes is a long way from...
That's the sense I was getting.
What? From Lost Creek. I think that's easier. I'm not sure it's more effective, but, you know.
It's easier to understand what the effect is, but much, much harder to coordinate the releases from...
Yes.
Yeah, 18 different...
And not all the releases would have the same sort of potential effects.
That's right. Or the measurable effects.
Yeah,
great idea.
It's easier when you just have Lost Creek. It's a hell of a...
How do we go forward on that? I think it's a great idea. It's important.
It might be something that's more in the flow management realm than our group here.
I think it could come from here and then get administered
and be developed
there. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Now, it's going to compete with... potentially with other things.
Sure.
But you saw in a year like this, you know, where we're hurting for water and we're actually not at the target now at Salem, the trade-off that's already been made is, okay, well, things are, relatively speaking, are cooler now. Let's not augment flow this year yet until things get bad. So we're doing some strategic thinking in that regard, but this would be different than what we're currently doing.
This is something that definitely needs a lot more attention, you know, given the pre-spawn issues that we have in all of the spring Chinook populations, the demonstrated improvements in the Rogue. You know, we have the USGS modeling that was done in the Willamette that would help us. And, you know, right now, under the current management, we have ESA-listed stocks, and some of the flow stuff's, in my mind, not real good for spring Chinook. So, I mean, this is kind of a no-brainer that needs more attention. And one of the things from the Rogue that I think is an important point is it's got to be precautionary. It's got to be, you know, before the outbreak occurs to manage it. Because back in the early 90s, it was more reactionary, and by the time the fish started showing the signs of a problem, it was just way too late.
Yeah, no, that's
when we had the big outbreaks.
Yeah, and that is absolutely how we approach it. It is in anticipation of conditions that are going to occur and getting the water there before those conditions occur.
Right. Well, it sounds like, Greg, you and Lance probably have the most experience and familiarity.
Well, I do down there day to day, week to week.
Yeah,
so
with these
I'm
things.
Very familiar with this.
So you think maybe you guys and maybe me and Cam could work at maybe developing some kind of draft proposal of what we might implement on the Willamette?
Sure.
Okay.
Take a shot at it for sure.
Okay. And then we could kick that to the flow management team and go from there.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Okay, moving on. 2.8, Kinsey HGMP. Dave, do you have any updates on this one?
Only to say that Joyce has been communicating with Rob via emails and letters and trying to work channels through Rob and others, and that's all I know at this point.
Yeah. It sounds like it's above the technical team here at this point.
Left the technical building.
Yep.
A while ago. Yeah.
All right, 2.9, Lieberg trapping. The action was for CAM to write up an operation and submit to the region for review by this meeting.
And I did not do that.
That's okay.
I've made some progress on it. It's just timing for myself.
Sure.
I've come up with no problems. Everything that I presented earlier on still suggests that it can be made to work. It just requires real-time monitoring of fish passage through Lieberg and coordination with E-Web to make sure that they do what they say they're going to do and manage flows on the river left side of the dam so that fish are attracted up to the trap ladder.
Right.
It is going to be, it has to be real time. We have to switch Lieberg monitoring from a more than month to month kind of understanding how many fish are moving to day to day or you know, a few days at a time.
Yeah, at least
we've already talked about that as a need anyway, so, and we're going to implement that starting next month.
Yeah, exactly. And so maybe like when you kind of had that 2-week window or something like that, when we get close to seeing that switch, and maybe within that window we start doing the day-to-day monitoring and more outside of that.
The trouble is that there are, I reconstructed all of the data going back to 2009 for fish passage of hatchery and wild fish through Lieberg. There are very clear and beautiful instances where very large numbers of wild fish migrate upstream early in the season with small numbers of hatchery fish where it makes no sense for us to run a trap.
Right.
Then another big pulse of hatchery fish moving with very low numbers of wild fish. Okay, that's ideal.
Right.
That's one, maybe 2 years out of the seven that I've kind of modeled. The other years, it's not clear. In almost every year, there is a dramatic decrease in the number of hatchery fish or number of wild fish moving upstream. Right.
Yep.
Followed by a pulse where equal numbers of hatchery and wild fish go upstream. So it still at that point makes sense because the magnitude of the movement is so much smaller. You're not handling a lot of fish.
Right.
But then there are two instances where there's pulses of wild fish moving up in large numbers. It goes up, it goes down. That's where we'd say, okay, time to start trapping.
Right.
And then it goes back up again. Wild fish abundance starts to go back up again. So we have to back off and stop. So it's not going to be as simple as it originally was lined out when I said, oh, we should do this. So that's just the way it is. But we can do it. I just have to write it.
Okay.
Everything else.
That makes sense. And in some of your research on that, is it more critical, do you think, to run that left bank spill gate to provide more traction?
Yes, but that's not going to happen. The E-Web situation is that they replaced the mechanics of the middle gate,
right.
And it's on warranty for 1 year and 1 year only. So if they don't operate most spill through the middle gate, then they can't test it. They can't kind of try to run it to failure to be able to get it fixed while it's on warranty. So they won't do that. What they did say they would do is open the left spill gate a small fixed amount that the spill is in the middle and river left. And I can't believe that's not going to have a benefit to making fish go over on that side.
It would.
They will not, in either case, be operating the right spill gate, which they've done in the past.
Right.
Because that would basically kill us underwater.
Yeah, that'd be no good. Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that they're willing to do that a little bit on the left. Makes sense. Okay. So we'll roll that action item over to next month then?
Yeah, sorry. Is that fair? I just didn't have time to dive into it.
That's okay. 2.10 is that same action item back from February for the Dexter releases into Little Fall Creek, which we've covered, so that can disappear. And the last one on there, 2.11, is the Steelhead Work Group, which is happening today, so that one can also disappear for now. On to updates. Marion Forks, Minto. Greg?
All right. Luckily, we got a little snow the other day at Marion Forks, so that was, our third snowfall of the year. So it didn't last very long and didn't increase the flows very much. But everything at Marion Forks is going well. Everything's still bonded outside. Pathology was cleared this month. Fish are still a few weeks ahead of schedule. We'll start our marking after Dan's done with the trailer in mid-June, which is a pretty typical for us. So everything up there is going well. As far as Minto, we were able to do the bonding of the 10 pair of winter steelhead yesterday for the surrogate program. That went real well. To date, we've seen 114 winter steelhead compared to 60 at this time last year. We've seen one summer steelhead compared to one last year, so the runs are kind of about the same. Steelhead fish condition for the adults this year is one of the worst I've ever seen. I don't know, low flows or seals or whatever, but a lot of beat up fish and a lot of the bruising and fungus is older stuff. It's not like fresh stuff, but fish condition factor of those is pretty poor. We were able to release the last groups of our summer steelhead smolts last week. Volitional release went excellent. About 95% of the fish were gone in about the first 6 hours, and by the next morning, 99% of them were gone. They're up to size. We starved them for about 4 or 5 days, had them nice and lean, and they moved out real well. So other than that, everything's going well for Minto.
Greg, is the starving thing typical operation?
Yeah, I guess starving isn't the real word. We just kind of take them off feed a little bit and lean them out.
We fast them to
motivate
condition factor. Yeah. And yeah. But
yeah. It's typical, Dave.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Greg. South San Am. Brett, are you on? Brett Boyd, are you on the phone?
He's there.
All right, John, do you want to carry that one forward?
Actually, no, because he's talking about Foster.
Okay.
I talked to him this morning. I wanted him on.
Okay.
I think he's there. I think he just stepped away.
Sure. All right, let's move on to McKenzie then. Kurt?
And I am here.
Awesome, thanks.
So what's been happening lately? Well, fish health is good. That's one good thing that's going on here. So that's all been good. We have Sarah in here again on Friday to do another check, and things have been going well. Mortality's low. Fish are eating well. They're getting their treatment for aquamycin treatment. They're eating it well. That's a change we made. We went to the number two starter with the aquamycin, which we do annually, and the fish are eating it much better than they do at a larger feed size, so still learning here. Anyway, EWEB has had the canal down for the last 11 days. We've been operating solely on Cogswell Creek, but that's been fine because it's been running 7 to 9 CFS, so we've had enough water. EWEB is repairing a leak downstream on the canal down in the Lieberg, town of Lieberg area, and also doing maintenance at their screening area up at the dam. An annual thing, but 11 days is long, and it's still down today, so I'm not sure what they're up to. I haven't heard a report lately. So, but I anticipate it coming back up in the next couple of days. They said it'd be no longer than 2 weeks, and so this is unusual for it to be down so long.
Yeah. Hey, does that, when you say the canal's down, that means they can't operate one of their hydros at the end of that thing?
No, they can't operate any of them, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah, they take it down. It's the lowest they ever do it. When they go after these leaks, they really take it down. We have 1 foot of water on the apron of our intake.
Does anybody ever get in there and do a fish salvage? And I'm more curious just to know if you find any Chinook juvenile in those canals. I know they're screened, but one never knows.
In Lieber Canal, I'm not aware of any of those, Dave. You know, when they did Walterville Canal years ago to put the screening in there, they found many schmaltzes, but there wasn't screening on that one either. So.
Right.
So there was thousands, actually. So,
wow.
No, and my son and I have fished up here for years, and I've never caught a spring Chinook schmaltz in there. you know, we catch cutthroat and we rarely get a rainbow even. So
yeah,
it's really cutthroat dominated pretty much.
Okay.
So around the hatchery, a lot of maintenance going on this time of year. We've been repairing some things on the fish ladder. We have, what is it, 9 steps, I believe it is, on the fish ladder there before it heads out to the river. When we released the fish first, or the mid-March, we had a couple of our wooden panels. One broke out and one was just compromised a little bit. And we've been in the process of replacing all the wood panels with UHMV, the plastic stuff that is 2-inch thick and just will last forever. Expensive stuff, though. But so we purchased 3 more panels, and we will have all of them with that material now when we get this project done. So if we don't do any wild adjustments to the fish ladder in the future, they'll be lasting forever. And we should have that done, I think, in the next couple of weeks, and so that'll be really nice. Also, we put engineering, Perry Baker from our up in Salem came down, and we've been looking at our intake for a while, and we really can't shut the intake off on the canal without scrambling and getting a bunch of boards made and sliding them into slots to shut the water flow off. So an emergency purpose, we would not be able to do that. We had to do it in 2003, and it took us a little while to get it done because you had to have boards built or actually made and processed for you to do that. So we do have a valve up there, but there are, on each side of the valve, are 2 6-foot areas that allow for dam boards to be put in there. But they've never been in there. So they have some extra steel panels that have been stored over at the screen shop, and we installed those on Monday. So now the valve can close, and we can actually close the intake off. Don't know if we can totally shut down all flow, but pretty darn close. And so if we have any oil spills or whatever, I'm thinking of those kind of things for the canal, that we would be able to shut down. So that would be that's a good thing. Just other normal maintenance around the hatchery is what we've been up to.
Great. Thank you, Kurt.
Any progress on breaking ground for the Cogswell Creek water supply improvements?
Not the guy to ask that. Anybody from the Corps want to chime in on that?
Yeah, that's probably more me. We did receive some additional funding to make that Cogswell mixing project move forward, but also to help reimburse for the cost of E-Web's break in that pipe that was up there. And we, talking with John, it sounded like what we want to do is issue that in a separate task order from the regular McKinsey operations and maintenance, and so that'll go out July 1st, hopefully, and that money will be available.
Nothing happens until we see the money.
Right.
Hey, real quick question for you, Kurt. You were talking about Cogswell Creek earlier and the flow you were getting out of there. Is that does that run fairly steady all year at about 7 to 9, or does it drop off?
Oh, it really drops out in the summertime day. We get it down to 1 to 2 CFS, depending on year, obviously. This year might be one of them, starting in July through October, kind of rain generated that watershed. So, but this time of year, we've been, when the canal was down, when the dam had their problems, we were running off of Cogswell. And at that time, we had up to 20 CFS during that time period in January. So you can see it, rain, snow, it, depending on the year, it can maintain itself for quite a while.
Yeah.
But that August, September, October, you're waiting for rain.
Okay, thanks.
All right, moving on to the cougar trap. Greg, any updates?
Cougar went into or opened around the middle of March. Things are very slow there. They always are. Obviously, we haven't got any salmon yet. We have moved 4 bull trout, which is good. Probably a few more than normal for the time of year. But yeah, it's up and running and rolling. We are looking to make some changes to a couple of the features at Cougar. We're going to install a different bellows and gate valve system than we have there currently. And that'll That'll happen at the end of the season, more than likely. But yeah, everything's up and rolling and waiting on salmon.
Great. Cool. All right, well, Emmett and Dexter, Dan.
Yeah, everything's good at both places. We are releasing our last group of fish out of Dexter this week. So it'll be dried up now, and we start the process of pressure washing and disinfecting it and getting it ready for the next group that comes down in May or June. As far as Lamet, everything's on a go. We're, of course, like everybody else with all the warm water. We're ahead of schedule on all our fry that are out, and just moving on.
Great. Thank you. Lieberg, John?
Lieberg is...
Anything going on? I saw you busted some crack dealers up there a while ago.
Oh, yeah, well, it is Lane County. So. But anyway, yeah, I think we talked about it over the last two or three years, all the just rampant thefts at the Lieberg hatchery. Well, they finally discovered the source. It was the neighbors.
Yeah, and the Christmas tree farm, right?
Yeah, right. And what turned out, we actually went, as part of that process, while they were talking with the county, they asked them if there was anything else missing and discovered that one of our pressure washers had disappeared the week before and they didn't even know it was gone. Somebody had actually had to have gone into the shop during the day and stolen the thing.
Wow.
So hopefully this will slow things down. I mean, we've lost hatchery entrance signs. We've lost our bill vendors, our feed machine, the whole box ripped off like an ATM.
We lost a $2,800 tower raft. Yeah. Well, I suppose it was sitting around behind some Christmas trees or something.
Yeah, well, there was a barn there that they allowed people to go into and look for stolen material. All we managed to get was some gas cans. But, you know, gas cans disappeared. They didn't mention that Wilish lost a big generator the night before they cleared their stuff out.
Oh, really?
They broke in, they cut the wall, the cyclone fence enclosure, and went in and opened up their trailer and stole the thing. But that'll help a lot. The rest of it is, Chris Lieber is trout, just trout. Like, those are just hatchery salmon. I remind Eric that they're just trout.
I don't think he likes to hear that.
He doesn't. That's why he doesn't even make these calls, because everybody reminds him they're just trout. Actually, probably the biggest thing going on
is... He's got a steelhead there.
But there's Scamania stock, so it's just hatchery steelheads. Yeah. But anyway, we're working with the Department of Homeland Security, and you know, the whole issue about formalin and hydrogen peroxide and security and stuff like that. And we're actually making some breakthroughs with the inspectors. We've been told by the DHS guys that are working there that we need to make an application for an agricultural exemption. And apparently nobody else has bothered to do this, but aquaculture is agriculture. Agricultural facilities are exempt from all these regulations. And if that ends up being the way out through this, it'll solve problems all over.
Oh, yeah.
So we just, I mean, that's nice. I just got the notification from them because it was Monday. So it's just real recent stuff. So hopefully that whole problem of security and formula and treatments will change.
Nice.
That would be really nice. Otherwise, it would be just a major pain.
Yeah.
Other than that, they're just, you know, hauling fish. This is stocking time.
Yeah.
Dumping time.
Mm-hmm. Fish counts at Bennett and Lieberg. I'm still not getting the Lieberg.
We haven't started posting it yet.
Okay.
I think we agreed that's going to start May 6th.
Yep. That's when the first one I will send out. Yeah. But Hoganson's counts.
Pardon me?
Hoganson's.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Bennett's are up and running. Both of them now installed the lower Bennett video box, and it's going fine. The first spring Chinook went up through upper Bennett. Yay.
Nice.
To my knowledge, nothing has shown up anywhere else.
Caught one at Fall Creek.
Oh, okay, good.
On Monday. So, earliest ever.
Wow.
Earliest ever.
Cool. So, nothing at South San Yam yet. Brett, are you back on?
Yeah, sorry, I had to step out for a second. Okay.
That's fine, we skipped you there. Do you want to give your update now?
Sure. This is Camden.
Yeah, that was all. Everything's cool. running? Great.
Yeah, awesome.
Okay, yeah. South San Am, everything's going well. We're just kind of wrapping up our volitional release of our summer steelhead yearlings. And they went out pretty well. We've going to let it go for another, probably week and a half, and then we'll put the screens back in and save the fish for a Fenton's study up at Green Peter. And the yearlings or fingerlings are doing well, both stocks, summers and springers. Foster, we're operating, checking the trap daily, operating it a couple times a week. And at this point, so far we've got 73 winters and 10 summers. All the winters are being taken up to Riverbend Campground. All the summers, we're just putting them, recycling them right now. Done a lot of cleanup and organization over there. Got the forklift, and so we were able to use that to do some of that. As we talked about earlier, we're looking at some different options for covering the pond, and then some of the core staff and engineers were out to look at our crowders last week and come up with a solution so they don't hang up as much, and look at some of the mod list items. But other than that, everything's been going pretty well and staying on schedule.
Great. Thank you.
I did have a question for anybody. Is anybody putting numbered Floyd tags in unmarked winter steelhead?
Yes. I think we put some numbered Floyd tags in North San Am winter steelhead last year. Greg, you still on?
Got us.
Last year, so have you seen a couple that could be repeat spawners?
We recycled 17 downriver that when we had the high gas levels. We saw 9 of those 17 back.
Were they tagged?
Yeah, we had one a while ago with a numbered Floyd tag. Were they yellow or orange? I'll go back and I'm looking at that. And then we have another one in there now. We'll get it out tomorrow if he doesn't jump out. But anyway, or if he doesn't go back over the fingerware. But anyway, we wrote the numbers down. So I just want to know who they were. We'll...
Brent, you sent me the numbers and the color and the species. I do that all the time. People wonder, what is this tag? And I'll find
started
it
with 051 and went through, I'd have 19 fish. Okay. Well, we'll get those numbers to you, Kim. This was curious.
Yeah. Just say, FYI. So, Paul Olmsted with me. He's now sort of our coordinator for adult tagging, record keeping. He keeps track of what tags of what type go in what fish and when they're recovered. So he's my go-to guy to say, hey, what is this? It could be a pit tag. It can be a Floyd tag, radio tag, all of that. He keeps on top of that.
All right. Okay, next item. Number 4 is Lieber trapping operations. We already talked about that. That'll be discussed next meeting. 5, pit and CWT monitoring at traps. Cam, okay. I think you requested a little discussion on this one.
So there's two parts to that. One is pit monitoring. We got pretty good at that last year. I think we had what we're treating as 100% scanning of fish at Foster and at Minto, and about 75%, Dan's estimate is about 75% of the Chinook were pit scanned at Dexter, and I don't think any pit scanning happened at McKenzie. I just don't remember. Kurt?
Pit tagging adults here?
Yeah.
Or you mean juveniles?
No, pit tagging, checking adult fish for pit tags at McKenzie Hatchery. Especially
we got one last year.
So are you scanning, what percentage of the fish coming into Mackenzie are being scanned for pit tags?
Well, we were just doing the unmarked fish that were being taken back to the river.
Okay.
And also, I believe the fish that were being outplanted.
Okay.
So we weren't doing all of them. Broodstock wise, those were those weren't scanned.
So my proposal is to try and get 100% scanning of all fish for pit tags at all facilities. The reason being is that Tom's paired release fish are coming back starting in probably in real numbers this coming year. Luke Whitman, who's taken over Kirk Schroeder's pit tag efforts for wild fish in the Mackenzie area, has released tens of thousands of pit tag fish juveniles, and they should conceivably start coming back. Well, they should have started coming back last year. They didn't in appreciable numbers. But with pit tags being such an important tagging methodology now, and the fact that we were just starting now to get the automatic pit tag interrogators in the ladders and whatnot, that's on the schedule, but it hasn't really happened. Hand scanning all the fish that come into the facilities would be very useful. So,
are we talking about unmarked fish only?
No, it includes hatchery. Well, for the Mackenzie, unmarked fish would probably be adequate because it's the North Sandy Yam, South Sandy Yam, and Middle Fork Willamette that have lots of pit tag hatchery fish. But
okay, well, we did get that done. Then all the unmarked fish last year were scanned.
What did you use for the scanner? Hoagie's little handheld?
Yeah, a little handheld that Mike and his crew had.
Because Dan and Greg and Brett have a cool new system that they've developed that's pretty straightforward, that you just slide the fish under. Would you like one?
Sure. Why not?
Dan, what would it take for us to get from 75% to 100% scanning of all fish coming into the Middle Fork?
It depends. Last year our biggest thing was we didn't get that pit tag scanner until partway through the run.
Right.
And so it's just, for us at Dexter, it's just one extra person to stand there and scan them all. We tried hooking it up to our code wire tag machine so that when we slid them through that, it would read them on their way out, but we could never get it to work correctly, so we have to actually run it over every fish. But yeah, it's just one extra person, especially when we're taking brood, because we're moving them through so fast, because we don't really care if they're code wire tagged or not, because we're going to find out when we spawn them.
Right.
We don't run them through the pit tag machine or the code wire tag machine, we just load them up. But it should be doable this year to do 100%.
Hey, Cam, this is Dave. I support the idea of scanning these fish for sure, 100%. But I'm curious to know whether Tom Friesen's paired release study actually had a budget line item in there to, assuming he's pit tagging all these things, to actually scan the returning adults. And then, as well, if Schroeder has been pit tagging tens of thousands, as you stated, did anybody ever anticipate the need to scan these things, which is critically important?
Right. So both of them were most interested in knowing whether the fish returned to the Willamette. And there's 100%, theoretically, 100% detection probability at Willamette Falls.
At Willamette.
To my knowledge, Kirk Schroeder didn't anticipate buying a bunch of equipment for the hatcheries to scan fish that volunteered to the hatcheries. But any of the fish that we recover as carcasses on our spawning ground surveys, we make sure that all the crews have pit tag scanners so they can get at those carcasses. The trouble with that is it's about a 10 to 20% carcass recovery rate on average, and that means we're missing the opportunity to scan and get otolith and scale samples from 80 to 90% of the fish that might have a pit tag in them. It's very valuable information. to get sample sizes, reasonable sample sizes, so that we can start to understand what the different life histories were contributing to returning adults. And this year is a good year to really embrace the idea that we want to make a significant effort, increase this effort going forward at increasing our recovery rate, pit tank fish as they come back, especially the wild fish, but also hatchery fish.
Yeah. Be great. Cool. Anything else on that one?
Yeah, coda wire tags.
Oh, yeah, right.
All right, so I'm really torn on this because I've always operated on the principle that we invested a lot of money into getting the wire into these fish, but me and my guys, we've been working at doing some analyses of historical data. It's part of the Hatchery Harmony work, and we're having some trouble understanding what recovery rates or detection rates were. It seems to be okay at the hatcheries as long as we can assume 100% capture probability or detection probability of a coded wire tag if that fish comes into the hatchery. And it just doesn't seem that that's uniformly been the case going back, especially back into the 90s. So what we started last year, and I frankly don't know whether this has usually happened in prior years, but we adopted the very simple model that if it beeps, the hatchery program keeps it. And that created a problem, a conflict with the outplanting program, because we have so many coded wire tag fish coming back that if we have to keep or kill that coded wire tag fish to read the wire, we didn't always have enough fish to reach program goals for outplanted fish. We didn't have enough non-coded wire tagged fish to outplant.
Did this occur at McKenzie last year?
No, McKenzie is a separate situation because for the last year, last year was the last time essentially 100% of the coded wire tag, of the fish returning to the McKenzie hatchery, were coded wire tag or blank wire tag.
Yeah.
So we had to outplant unscreened coded wire tag fish, but we know how many it was and we knew they were all coded wire tag.
Right.
So the expansion in the case of the McKenzie is easy. It's not so easy in the other facilities. What's going on that? It's my preference is to stick with the simple model. If it beeps, we keep it and work around the fact that we might not always have enough fish to reach our outplanting goals. Failing that, we have to take a very hard look at Mickey Varney's diatribe, long description of what it takes to get accurate, precise estimates of coded wire tag recoveries when you've only got a partial sample. You have to know whether a fish has wire that you didn't screen. And it's not as simple as saying, okay, this number of fish beat, but we outplanted them without sampling them. Because there's a very significant number of false positives at all the facilities where we get a beat, but it's a hook or it's something, a piece of magnetite stuck in the gills, whatever. And so you have to know that too. There's a lot of, and Mickey described this in detail, what it would take. It's of concern. It means we're giving up accuracy and precision if we don't really invest in a system to really track coded wire tag entry fish into the hatchery and what their disposition is. My preference is to stick with the if it beeps, keep it. And I'm a little selfish on that. We've got a number of experiments that are going to be adults coming back this year, next year, that I started when I first came on with the agency, so these fish are coming back now. I had anticipated at that point that we'd have 100% recovery at the hatcheries, and I can use that. I don't want to risk the outcome of the Hatcher by Wild Cross experiments 2 years in a row and the final experiments at the size and time of release of ship from different facilities. But I will, if it's logistically impossible, to just sample every coded wire tag that comes into the fish, that comes into each hatchery. And I'd add that Bruce McIntosh, I have his memo on this, said years ago, if a coded wire tag fish comes into the hatchery, we're going to sample it. but that was years ago when there weren't quite as many Cotowar tank fish coming back into the hatcheries.
Right.
So, point of discussion. What do you want to do? What can I do about this?
I guess my only concern would be if it's really cutting into the number of fish we can outplant. If we can only outplant 50% of our goal, then that seems like a problem.
Well, if you want to look at numbers at Minto last year, CWT kill 756, outplants 872.
So we could have outplanted nearly twice as many fish if we didn't have 100% Cotowar tag sampling at Minto.
What was the goal for?
Like,
1,500 on the disposition.
15.
900 in the north, 600 in the Brightmouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of like you. We went to a lot of work to CWT all these fish for good data. Yeah, it's a pain in the ass to kill them all, but I think the information we get for them is going to help mold what we do in the future.
What is the typical percentage of sampling you do? Is it 10% of the total fish you release, or 20, or is there a hard number?
Are you asking how many, what percent are coated wire tag? Or
yep, I'm asking how many are coated wire tag.
Oh, it varies depending on, I've seen it as low as 6% of the fish, and I've seen it as high as 75% of the fish. Just depends on what the studies are. Actually, one year we did 100% coated wire tag.
Wait, hang on. Let me rephrase my question. I probably didn't ask right. If we were doing no actual research study, what percent of coated wire tags? What percent of the fish would be coated wire tagged and released? Because we have a requirement, a mandate, don't we, to coated wire tag X percent of these fish that are released, regardless of whether we're doing a paired release study or some other type of study.
Okay, I'm not aware of a mandate, but on average it's been about 20% of all the fish released in the upper Willamette have some wire in them, or have wire in them. The idea is that every significant release group has a representative portion of them coated wire tagged.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and my I was trying to sort of get at this question that was brought up about how many fish are we not outplanting. But if we knew we were releasing a million smolts and we knew that 20% were coated wire tagged, you got to sort of try to calculate how many will actually end up back at the as adults back in the ladder to be outplanted. And your numbers start shrinking fairly quickly.
Because we dramatically increased the percentage of fish we coated wire tagged in the broods 2009 and 10 or 10 and 11. For the hatchery by wild cross, two hatchery by wild cross experiments year to year, and there were three iterations of the size and time at release. Those fish are coming back now. I mean, into the future, probably not going to be an issue. We'll be probably dropping back to about a 20% mark rate.
And what's the purpose of that? Just to track harvest?
To track smolt to adult return rates. Okay. So to try to get SARs, both harvest and recoveries at the hatchery, and theoretically with better carcass recoveries, we could look at escapement.
Which is why we have to mark a certain percent of the fish we release, regardless of whatever types of studies are being done, because we do need that for SAR data and harvest data.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
So into the future, we know we will be doing it. I'm guessing it'll be at about the 20% level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But now, especially in the, McKenzie also, but North Santiam, we've got far more than that.
Yeah. Well, we did it at McKenzie because we thought we'd have an automated facility that would be ejecting and rejecting the coated wire tagged fish, but that never came to fruition. But I support, for whatever it's worth, I support the idea of taking them out of the fishery as well, because that's good data that if we just outplant them, we lose that data.
Yeah, it would seem silly to compromise the studies now by not.
Okay, but we are balancing it against the need to get these fish out.
Right.
So that's why I kind of brought up, like, maybe we want to establish a threshold where once we know that we won't be able to outplant half or 25% or whatever the amount of fish that we established as a goal in the disposition tables, then maybe we got to cut the cord at some point. I don't know what level we would want to put that at?
It could be an in-season thing, I think. Think about this. Could we do it in season as we accumulate wire at the hatcheries, try to project based on what percentage of the fish beat and what we think run size is going to be, where we're going to end up at the end of the season, and then decide mid-season or later that we'll adopt a rigid, very systematic sampling regimen to know whether a fish is outplanted with a coated wire tag or not. Mm-hmm. I'll think about that. It's algebra. Because then we'd have basically a mixed sampling intensity.
Yeah.
It does. It is dangerous. It's much easier to go with if it beeps, keep it. But it
right.
conflicts with other things that everybody's interested in having go on.
Yeah.
Well, do you have a set out plant number, or has it got a range?
We set it at
I think
the
it's
disposition
a set number.
Just one
target.
So is it up to, or is it plus or minus 10-20%?
No.
That you could manage, you could build this in, or we just say 1,500 fish.
The way we've done it during my tenure is we come up as a group with a number and put that in the disposition tables. Mm-hmm. And Bernadette, I frankly don't remember. I know I've looked at them all the time. Is it up to, or is that a fixed number that we're calling our goal?
For the outplant numbers?
Yeah.
It's a target number.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't know that we've had opportunities to go over all that often. I don't know. You guys know better than I would, but.
So I think we just set a number, and that's our goal. It's not a range.
So a couple of comments on the coated wire tag stuff. So going into the future, I can't think of any ESA mandates that would direct, what percentage, and as far as, SARs and fishery management, things are a lot different now than what they were decades ago that required, a certain percent of coated wire tags and for marking and all of that. And so, for fisheries management, I'm not sure how much coated wire tags are being used at where we're at now. They use genetic analyses, and there's just so many marked hatchery fish out there now that I'm not sure if it's still used like it was. And as far as SARs, there's always other means to do that. So there's no constraints that I can think of for coated wire tag, at least for our side of things. Originally we had a lot of blank tag or coated wire tags going into them because that's how we were going to sort the fish at the traps, but that isn't being used.
Right. As an aside, though, that has been proposed for the South Santiam. Loosely proposed, not formally proposed, but it's been mentioned as a possibility for the South Santiam to decrease the passage of unclipped hatchery fish above Foster. That's just been thrown out there. That could happen into the future.
Yeah, well, hopefully the traps indeed have been designed to accommodate that. They were supposed to.
Okay.
I'm hearing no strong objections to continue to think about it, but to start off with saying we're going to sample coated wire tag fish as they come into the hatchery. And it'd be my crews sampling most of the fish. Not all, but most of the fish. The snouts are cut off and bagged. Data is kept by my crews. So
That seems fine. I don't have any objections to it.
Hatchery managers?
Not just more work, but I think the data is worth it. It's just going to be interesting on low, warm, flow years when the fish come in and what the condition will be.
All right. I think it would be good, though, to maybe monitor in season and just see
how far off outplant goals we might get to.
Yeah.
Just looking at our 10 and 11 releases with research fish, it looks like about a 5% add only, 45% add coated wire tag in the hatchery releases. So I'm looking at the data, right? So
45%?
Yeah. So, I mean, if we see a 2,000 fish Chinook return, we should have 1,000, you know, 1,000 coated wire tags, and generally we try to put those towards brood stock and then possibly 1,000 for outplanting. I mean, I'm just guessing.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's aren't those Marion Forks tagging studies, wasn't it a windfall of free coated wire tags that led us into that path?
I don't know.
I mean, normally we don't stock, you know, we don't tag 50. It costs us a ton of money to coated wire tag fish.
Yeah.
And so
it wasn't a windfall. We had David asked for the design of a Hatchery by Wild Cross study and size and time of release at McKenzie and at North Saint Anne, and that was my first assignment back in late 2010.
When you made your month claim to fame with that.
Well, I haven't got any data back yet.
But what I'm saying is that we got special funding to do that.
And right, additional funding, research.
Typically,
funding.
We're funded more at the 20% level, and which.
Right.
No, we're actually more generally before all this, we would tag between 50 and 100,000. So we're more at the 7 to 14% third wire tag.
I've asked Mickey several times if there was some policy on how many we're supposed to tag, and I have never gotten an answer.
Well, I've got one from the coated wire tag group. If you want to know what your recovery, the reasonable recoveries of a single release group from Chinook salmon in the upper Willamette, you need to tag 50,000 fish or more. They're much happier with 75,000 to 100,000 fish tag. The releases that happened back in the day of 20 and 30,000 tag fish groups were useless.
Yeah.
There were plenty of instances where fish were released with that number of tags, and you didn't get any recovery, or you got two.
Yeah, I know 25,000 was a pretty standard number. No matter how many fish you release it, you coated wire tag 20, which is not enough. Fish.
And there was an awful lot of instances. And this Mark Johnson published a paper based on the coated wire tag recovery stuff, and that was one of the biggest problems he had, is that there were instances of no recoveries when there were small numbers of fish released with tags. Hmm. And is that because of the small number of tags or because of low survival of those fish? And you can't break that apart.
Yeah. So. Okay.
That's probably more than we need to talk about, but okay.
No, that seems fair. So, proceeding with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Number six, funding for the Cougar Pedigree Study. I talked with Dave Griffith, and it sounds like they will not have funding to do that this year. And he reminded me that these studies and which pedigree studies were funded were prioritized in the Armony forum. And it sounds like that forum, with some contention, decided to prioritize the Detroit and the Foster studies above an additional year of Cougar.
Well, I also think it's worth noting that study was prioritized a lot higher than a lot of other studies that did receive funding. And ODFW still recommends that study be funded because it's necessary to inform our ongoing management decisions.
Sure. That makes sense. I definitely realize that and I hear that. And I'm not involved with the Armony group, but in my discussion with those guys, it sounded like after having complete cohorts from 07, 08, and partials from 09 and 010, they felt like there was pretty standard results among all those years, and there wasn't enough variance to prioritize an additional year.
Well, part of the problem there is that although the principal objective of the studies was look at adult-to-adult returns, other data from those studies included the timing of returns to Cougar of fish that were born above Cougar. Mm-hmm. And it deeply and profoundly affected our decisions on how we collaboratively would operate the Cougar trap to maximize the percentage of fish that belong above Cougar going up there.
Right.
And minimize the percentage of fish that didn't belong up there getting them back downstream.
Mm-hmm.
And we only have one decent year worth of data to illustrate that because of the difficulties getting cougar operations to operate smoothly for the whole season. Now we're in a place where we think the cougar trap is going to go fine this year, like it did last year. And if that's what's going to happen into the future, we need to know what the behavior of the fish is
under
normal trapping operations. Because the first 2 years of it, yeah, we got our answers about adult-to-adult fitness, basically, but we didn't have suitable data on the actual kind of more boots-on-the-ground management of the trapping operation. And if we had at least one more year data where we have normal trap operations, then we'd have a lot more confidence that what we decided to do with a September 1 cutoff date for, you know, free passage is the right thing to do. Because the option, if we don't have to be prudent, if we don't have supporting data, is to back off that threshold date to like July or something. And the logistics are huge. That means any fish coming back up to cougar is going to get transported back downstream until it proves it really wants to go above cougar.
Right.
We don't want to do that. For one thing, I think that there's a possibility that we would be influencing the survival of those fish that come back up to cougar because they have to be handled and trucked twice.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I know it's more boots on the ground, but if we got one more year of data that matched the excellent data we got last year, we'd be making decisions with a full data set and not with just some guesses from the first 2 years. So
help me understand, just because I wasn't around, what are the differences in the trap operation that you're saying were consistent last year and should be consistent this year,
but
maybe differed in past years?
Seven last year through the season, for the previous 2 years, and I wish Greg was here because he could tell you in intimate detail.
Yeah.
Things happened. A pair of pumps blew out, and they had to shut down the trap. They couldn't open up. They opened up the trap, and then they stopped operating the trap for a couple of months, and then operated the trap again.
I remember some of those windows that you had in the data that you presented the last meeting or the meeting before, where it had like a week or two where it was out of commission.
More than that. I mean, there were long intervals where things weren't working right. And it was just, you know, that's the way it is. These are complicated machines. It takes a couple of years to get them working. But it looked like from last year's results, you guys did it. It's done. It's a nice operation now.
Right.
But that means we have exactly a sample size of one now to say this is what fish will do year to year. And everybody knows what a sample size of one is good for.
Do we have comparable data among a number of years in and around July 1st and September 1st? I guess where are those windows, and where do they sit in relation to cutoff dates that we've talked about? Because from what I can recall in the data that you presented, I think we had good information around the September 1st window where it did show that drop in fish that were returning to cougar that came from cougar.
I think that's right. Do we have that? I don't want to speak out of turn. This isn't my project. It's just that we've all, both the Corps, Greg, Mark Johnson, everybody has been discussing it. Yeah. And apparently I'm the one guy in the room or on the phone. Well, Bernadette is there too. Is there room to keep looking at it? I mean, it's not a lot of money. It's not.
Right. Yeah, Mark said yesterday it was 216 samples, adult samples. That's, you know, two trays worth of samples, and I mean he didn't have an exact cost estimate, but it was less than $30,000. I mean, we're not talking about a huge project here, and you know, there have been numerous years of samples taken, but like Cam said, we don't have that many years of actual results from the study, and with the variation in how the trap was operated, it's hard to establish a clear pattern, and having an additional year of data would help with that. And
sure.
So, okay, this is Dave. I have a couple questions here, because maybe I was getting confused as to what this agenda subject was. I originally thought
we had a discussion about trying to get some current samples genetically analyzed before July 1, so a decision could be made for 2015 as to the fate of these fish returning to Cougar Dam. It sounds like from what I'm hearing now, we're talking about maybe two things, and one of them is actually collecting samples this year, and that's, Cameron, that's what you were talking about?
We're totally going to do that. Everybody's on
boots
board.
On the ground,
that.
Right? Yep. Is that what that meant, the boots on the ground thing?
Making decisions about how to outplant fish. That's the boots on the ground thing I was talking about. We are going to, it's a separate issue that we're going to continue, Greg is going to continue sampling DNA from all the fish that he outplants.
Okay, and that was my understanding as well. So then help me understand what the boots on the ground thing is. So I'm just not following that. You're going to, and this is going to cost $30,000 to make a decision to do what? I'm really struggling to understand.
So this, I'm channeling Jeff Ziller and the district, basically, who are uncomfortable with taking naturally produced fish that were born below Cougar and passing them above Cougar, where their offspring will suffer high mortality.
Right.
So what we've decided
to do. That's a hypothetical statement, right?
We're absolutely certain on if you can trust the sample size of one, last year's data. There were fish that we outplanted. Or that we outplanted early in the season that actually shouldn't have been outplanted. They weren't born above there. But Bernadette and others came up with, I think, a nice design that sort of we think was working pretty well to stop freely passing natural origin fish starting September 1st.
Right.
Because on average, it looked like the September 1st and after fish were mostly actually born below Cougar.
Right, correct.
What the district is concerned about is the relatively small number, relative to the whole run, that did come back early, that didn't belong above Cougar. And what if we can't get supporting information from a repeat of the pedigree study, looking just at the adult fish that we have samples for from last year, then he wants to roll back the time that we start kind of recycling unclipped fish to July.
I understand everything you just said, and that's based on, help me out, no science, correct? No data?
It's just conservative. It's not no data. It's a limited body of data from last year's 2013 sampling.
Yeah, because there are folks who are not comfortable with that September 1 cutoff date. So one more time, because maybe I'm just not hearing it. What's the $30,000 for? That's what I'm trying to understand.
That's to run the samples that were collected last year.
Between now and July 1. I mean, isn't that the cutoff date, July 1?
Well, you could make the decision at any point whether to stop recycling them and start putting them above. And I guess I would say when you said it's based on no data, I would say we have been showing that we're putting fish that originated below above. And Jeff's point is the most conservative approach to protect those fish when we don't know in real time where they came from is to put them back below the dam.
Yeah, ideally the real time would be the way to go, but So I do understand. It just took me a little while. You're basically, I think, asking the Corps to fund this analysis and hopefully get it done between now and July 1. And we figured out a month ago this is impossible to do. There's no money, number one, and also that getting a contract into place takes quite a while, a lot of you guys know. Having said that, there is absolute interest on the Corps side to have this analysis done. It might be done later on in this calendar year when we actually have time and funding to get it done. So yeah, we're clearly interested in more data. I think it's important too. So we all agree on that. I just think that time frame. I know that time frame is not possible for us to achieve.
So this is Lance. I just want to stress the value of having this information. I mean, this is
We use this information each and every season, preseason and postseason, to evaluate how management is working, and it's been essential. I mean, it's some of the rare cases, in my mind, where we're actually using the data, RM&E data, in season to guide future management decisions. And so having an extra year of data, the latest data, is extremely valuable. So I'm hoping that the Corps is going to see the value of continuing to fund this project and analyze the samples, not just for last year, but into the future. And it's related to the, you know, the reintroduction program. It's related to evaluating the success of the hatchery program and jump-starting a run. I mean, there's a lot more to it than what we're talking about, too, in terms of informing management.
Yeah, Lance, I totally agree. I agree with everyone that this data would be useful and it would be helpful. But I don't think us discussing whether or not it's going to get funded in this forum is going to be helpful. It's from my
understanding. Is there any opportunities to fund it out of the hatchery RM&E?
Not
Dave?
That I'm aware of.
Well, let me ask this question. What is it we're funding? Is there a written proposal? You said Bernadette had written something up. Is there something? Is there a proposal that we could evaluate?
Hang on. The original proposal was written by Michael Banks, and this is for the pedigree work. And
right.
I think you got that for you. I put you in contact with him about a month ago.
Correct.
And I don't know what happened after that. I was just the go-between. But the email that I saw when he responded to you said that this was the full-blown proposal that was originally submitted, but that he was more than willing to entertain a change in scope based on a collaboration between you or whoever the CO would be for that work, now that it's not Griff.
Yeah, and other folks have seen Michael Banks' study. This is a couple years old now, isn't it? Yeah?
This is a continuation of a long-term study, so the proposal was in the RM&E process last year. It didn't get ranked high enough by the Corps, and NIMS and ODFW thought it was higher ranked. What we're talking about now is a subset of that proposal, analyzing the adult samples collected from last year so we could at least get that most critical information.
Okay, thanks.
That's actually got me thinking.
I'll go back and take a look at that.
Is it possible that Rich or whoever did look at the idea of funding this was assuming that it was the original 2014 proposal that was juvenile samples, a lot more adult samples. It's just the small set of unclipped fish that came back to Cougar last season, the 219 fish.
I don't think so. I talked to Griff yesterday and asked him specifically about the 2014 samples and analyzing those, and I think he understands that that's the case. It's not the full-blown thing.
Okay. The full-blown thing, we understand.
Right.
Yeah, and I'll speak to Rich, too. I think he's aware of that as well.
Yeah.
I'll verify with him after the meeting.
So NIMS and ODFW had the opportunity to provide input and prioritize these studies within the RM&E Forum, and it sounds like the Corps chose to do otherwise.
There was a difference in the weighting of the ranks among agencies. That's
right.
Not the first time that's happened.
Sure.
ODF&W and NOAA ranked it higher than the Corps and the EPA. I don't remember. It's a massive table. You'll have
so, that. In my opinion, it seems like those should be averaged out and take everyone's opinion equally and then move forward. But
so they were, and this one ranked higher than many studies that were funded. And
yeah.
We elevated it up all the way to the steering team, et cetera, and the Corps still chose not to fund it.
Hmm.
Happens every year in the RM&E process. It's pretty frustrating.
I can imagine. I understand.
But the bottom line is there is no money to fund it, no matter how we got to this point, right?
Not at this point, yep. Yeah. There's no money to fund it, as far as I know. Not for this year. Not right now.
Okay. But Dave, just to reiterate, you did say that there was an interest as funding becomes available to process these samples. It's not just my guys creating a library. Because we're going to keep sampling them and archiving them. They're useful, very useful samples.
Well, all right. Moving on. Number 7, Little Fall Creek outplanting. We covered that in the action items. Number 8, delayed outplanting strategies. Chris Caudill, would you happen to be on the line?
I would.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Cam, do you want to kick this one off? Or?
Sure.
Okay,
well, both Minto and Foster fish collection facilities were engineered with long-term holding ponds that were intended for holding fish, not for broodstock, but for delayed outplanting. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of work out there right now that is on the cusp of being done from Chris Caudill's research on pre-spawning mortality coordinated with Carl Schreck. Both research groups have a clear understanding that the thermal exposure of fish is a contributing factor to pre-spawning mortality, and we're looking at a year where everybody is predicting very poor upriver conditions, and one option is to use the existing holding ponds for delayed outplanting of fish, especially above Foster Dam. Mm-hmm. We're set up for it. Apparently there is an interest in at least thinking about it. The trouble is that at Foster Dam, these are wild fish,
right,
for the most part. And we've not done it before. But they've sure done it for hatchery fish at both facilities now, 1 year at Foster and 2 years at Minto. And pre-spawning mortality of hatchery fish at both facilities was very, very low. They appear to be good places to hold adult fish without killing them, mm-hmm. those two facilities. Does that translate into confidence that we can increase survival of the fish we ultimately outplant? And I think it does. I think that's true. We can do that. Mm-hmm. And with Chris Caudill's expertise and his group's expertise with active tagging and my crews on the ground doing our spawning ground and pre-spawning mortality surveys, I think we'll actually be able to estimate it. We'll see whether we'll have higher survival of fish that are outplanted after they've been held for a while under ideal conditions at the collection facilities, and especially if we're comparing it to fish that are outplanted the way we've normally done it. It's just as they enter the facility, they get out tagged and outplanted.
Right.
Chris has had a proposal in the works that I've tried to help with in the Middle Fork now for, I believe, Chris, 4 years to try to do something similar at the Middle Fork, but we haven't pulled it off.
We did this for a couple of years with ODFW's help at the Willamette Hatchery, and saw some indication in 1 year that there may have been an effect. And there were some real operational issues with implementing the experiment. And on top of that, we did the experiment in a couple of cool years, and it was a North Fork, Middle Fork. So it's perhaps not surprising that we didn't see any effects manifest. And then we've been proposing to do a similar experiment at Foster, and we had discussions with NOAA Fisheries and the Corps and some folks at ODFW, I believe, last spring. Everybody appeared to agree that it was an idea worth pursuing with some number of wild fish, and everybody in the end decided that the risk was too high in the first year of the operation of the new facility to try out. But Cam is correct in that our results at a couple of different scales are indicating that thermal exposure of fish is associated with pre-spawn mortality, particularly when temperatures get to be warm above 17 or 18 degrees, average temperatures in July or August, and obviously there's a lot of concern about the conditions that are setting up for the summer. So we are, I'll have crews there, and we would be able to implement an experiment at either facility this year and, try it out.
Sounds like a reasonable idea to me. I have mild confidence that this would probably improve the conditions. I think Lance brought up a good point last time around in that instead of putting all of our eggs into one basket and doing this with all fish across the board, that we maybe do some fish per usual and then take a select group and try this.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I intended to
do. Absolutely. That was the plan all along, was to tag no more than, or to hold no more than, you know, some percentage, 20% or a quarter of the untagged, or the unclipped fish arriving to the trap to minimize the risk of to any particular group.
Right. So is that what you guys have settled on?
I have
25%.
We have to get approval from on high. So the district has to approve it, and NOAA has to buy off on it. But what I don't, Chris, you're far more expert at this than I. But can it be folded into your existing rated active tagging design?
Yeah, I think so. We'd have to think through how to allocate the samples and the tag that we've been allocated, but I think we could do it. The one, you know, one caveat that's important to note is, as Cam noted earlier, recovery rates are, you know, we get about one out of every five fish back, and so the sample size of the number of fish we hold that we actually get data back on pre-spawn mortality tends to be lower than, you know, considerably lower than the number that are held. So I just want to be clear with everybody that unless it's a really strong effect, it's unlikely we'd be able to detect the effect in the first year of a study. And then, of course, it's complicated by interannual effects as well. But again, everything that we know to date supports the idea that this is a potential management strategy, given particularly the forecast for the conditions for this year in terms of water availability.
Yeah, all of us working on pre-spawning mortality, hate to say it, but we've kind of been waiting for a really awful year because it's very hard to look at it. When effect size is small, it's very hard to detect it. And we've had off and on, but relatively benign conditions since we really started actively pursuing pre-spawning mortality studies.
Mm-hmm. Lance, you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think it's good to test it and just try it out, but I still stand by, you know, not having all of the fish in one group.
Yeah, I don't want to be responsible for that, you know.
Right, and I did not intend to imply that. If I did, that was an error on my part.
Yeah. We have proposed to release fish into the reservoir again this year, and one of the results from last year was that nearly a quarter of the fish we put into the reservoir fell back, and we are in the process of trying to identify whether the 10 fish that fell back at Foster after being outplanted to the reservoir were originated from downstream or upstream, and that'll help us interpret whether or not that fallback is related to operational or behavioral phenomena.
Is for Green Peter Core, do you know, is there anything out of the ordinary going to happen with water temperatures flows there this summer?
I'm not sure, Lance. Chris Walker, are you still on the line? Chris had another meeting to attend today. I can check with him, but I'm not sure off the top of my head, Lance.
Okay. Yeah, maybe check on that and see if there's anything different.
Sure.
That would affect, you know, the adults holding down below.
One of the things that does need to be worked out ahead of time, I was talking with some of the core folks down in Portland 2 weeks ago, and they did express some concern about potentially drawing down Foster Reservoir low enough that they would run out of cold water. I don't know, but nobody had any idea whether that was actually a realistic concern or not. I think for this experiment, the fish that we held at the Foster facility would be direct outplanted to the South Santiam because that would maximize any difference in thermal exposure. We would hold them until shortly before the spawning period or when temperatures came down in the fall.
Chris, when you spoke to the folks in Portland office, did you speak to Griff Rich, or Fenton?
It was Fenton and Griff.
Good. Because we started talking about this at the hatchery management team meetings a month or two ago, and then I just actually brought it up during an RM&E meeting, and they seemed pretty surprised that we had been talking about it here. And I'd hope.
But you didn't hear it from me.
All right. I don't know why they were surprised, but they were. So as long as they're on board, that's good.
Yeah.
We want to get them out of the loop.
Yeah, so and it was one of the things that I think Fenton was going to follow through on, but he has been out on annual leave last week and I think part of this week, or all of this week. So I guess my understanding of the purpose of me calling in was to kind of explain our rationale and the broad concept of this proposed experiment. And then presumably the next step would be, assuming this group agrees that it's a reasonable idea, that Cam and I would go ahead and move forward and try and coordinate the details with the relevant agencies. Is that correct?
Sounds right to me.
Good. Dave?
Yes, I agree.
Excellent.
So folks agree that that's the process. Do they agree with the idea?
Talking about delayed out plants, maybe holding some fish at Foster.
At Foster?
Yeah.
Talk about other members of our
like maybe
of our
25%.
I was out of the room. I mean, I have strong feelings about delayed out plants, but I'll save them. It's not a concept in general, long term, that I support.
Right, and then we're not saying
in short term. In extreme situations, I get it.
So we're predicting
like this
extreme
year.
Situation this
yeah.
year.
No, that and might make sense this year.
Right.
Yeah.
And Greg, I don't think anybody's proposing this would become a routine operation. It would be a management strategy that would be triggered by some forecast.
Okay.
This is Greg at Minto. I missed the first part. Is this Minto, Foster, were we talking?
Foster for the most part, but we're also talking about what might occur at Minto. The Minto modifications are attractive because we have more flexibility on what we do with the hatchery fish outplanting.
Okay, I might have missed part of this. Just for me this year, with a limited number of outplants with the amount of wire we want to collect, obviously the better water conditions are going to be above the dams. And then with Minto, you got to figure in electrical costs if we're going to run more pumps and run more ponds, and then a formalin cost. I mean, that's just some concerns. I'm not saying we can't do it. There's just, other factors to think in.
Right. We were just considering Minto because it was one of the other opportunities with the state-of-the-art facility.
Sure.
Foster
sure.
is the one we think is the place it could and should happen first.
In no small part because the potential for unfavorable thermal conditions is greater above Foster than above Detroit, in my understanding.
Correct.
At this stage.
Hey, Cam, do you know, are they going to want to inject those fish with antibiotics?
I prefer not.
What they're wanting to do?
I prefer not, but as you should have heard, Chris and I haven't sat down to line out the details. We got pretty much shut down last year, so we haven't really collaborated yet to come up with exactly what we're going to do. So it's just a broad
brush.
Just
let us know because basically the erythromycin substitute has to be ordered ahead of time. And so right now we've ordered just enough for our brood stock. So if that's the, for BKD. So if that's something you want to do, just like I said, let us know.
Okay, we're talking something like, I'm guessing here, about 75 fish.
Oh, okay.
Brett, are you doing the Draxon or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I think from the core standpoint, what's been proposed so far seems reasonable. I think we're on board with that.
Okay.
Who from the district would you need? Is that Elise Kelly?
Elise Kelly.
Yeah. Elise Kelly, are you on the line by chance? Nope. Okay. Do you want to...
Yes, of course.
Okay, great. Lance, yay or nay?
Well, I like the idea of testing it, but and one other thought was, is there a way to distinguish the fish that are held long-term when they were collected?
We will do so. They will all be individually tagged, pit tagged most likely, at the time we capture them.
Okay. Are you trying to get a representative of the run, or at least the collection?
That would be my desire.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I think it sounds good for a test. I'll talk with Stephanie and Kim and see if they have anything to add.
Yeah, we'll need to look at the permit. Depending on what you guys decide, we may need to modify the permit slightly. And to be clear, I don't think we would request any additional take in terms of the numbers put above Foster.
And these would all be unmarked Chinook at the trap, right?
Correct.
Okay. Anything else on that one? Moving forward, you're going to get...
at least me.
Yeah. Talk to the district. All right. All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Chris, and providing that extra information.
Sure. No problem. Please let me know if any additional questions arise.
Will do.
All right.
Can we talk tomorrow, Chris?
What's that?
When am I going to see you again? You said you were going to be in town sometime soon.
I haven't scheduled a trip, but I'll be in touch soon, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
Cool.
Okay.
See you, Chris. All right, so that's the regular HMT business. We want to take a quick break, go to the bathroom, get a drink of water, whatever. And then we'll have Mr. Pevin present. Cool. Folks on the phone, we'll take 5 minutes.
What time should we reconvene, Andy?
5 minutes.
Five. We'll be back. Let's make it 10.
All right.
Let's go for a whopping 10-minute break.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks. Bye.